Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for May 5th, 2024, the sixth Sunday of Easter in year B. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. And Bruce, pause for effect. How are you?
I'm good. It's May.
It is May.
So it's like zoomy
zoom. Yeah, this is when those flowers come from the showers that we had. Right?
That too.
Very good.
I'm thinking more of auto racing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Us being from Indiana, of course, that's my first thought.
We should have an awareness of
it. You and I are not originally from this state, so we are imposters in a foreign land.
After living here about 15 years, I finally bought a plastic checkered flag to put on my mailbox.
Oh,
a week ago.
You got tired of getting razzed about it.
Yeah, everyone else has these, you know, almost Christmas decoration level of...
You one of them California boys? I don't like racing?
I was told when I moved in and I put up a on the flagpole that was pre-existing on the front lawn, University of California Bears flag.
Yeah, way to call yourself out as like some sort of Hollywood elitist.
Nowadays, maybe so. But back then, more than one neighbor said, oh, thank God you're not a Big Ten fan. That really has caused some trouble in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We don't care about what
Johnny down the street put up a Wolverines flag.
Well, then I started looking. And,
we know, haven't seen him in a while.
We have quite a few just on our long street. Michigan and Michigan State houses.
Yeah.
Yes, football and basketball season, the banners are up.
Yep.
So, yes, the thing I can agree on is the enjoyment of those quickity-quick cars.
How they go with the vroom vroom.
Yeah. Well, and our neighborhood is close enough by pro flying distance that we can easily hear the race.
Oh, yeah. It's actually, yeah, it goes for quite a while. Oh, like quite a ways out.
The noise. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It is tremendous. It echoes for many miles.
Yeah, and I think we're like 4 miles from the track.
Yeah.
So it's easily in range.
I swear, depending on whether or not there's much of a breeze.
Oh, yeah, that'll make a difference.
We can hear it from up here.
I bet so. In Fishers, yeah.
Yeah, so I've gone before. I'm not that big of a race fan, but I have gone before.
Did you get all dirty?
I simply by sweating out of my skin, yes.
Okay.
Almost always the hottest day of the year, yeah, for some odd reason.
I was talking to one of Kathy's friends who... You know, it's one of these, oh, you got to go. And man, she, the friend's like 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, tell me about it. Oh, you know, we go with our family. That's great. Da, da, da. And I said, oh, yeah, that does sound enjoyable. I said, oh, but you do get all dirty. And I was like, what? He said, they're changing those tires.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're throwing into the air ground up tires.
Yeah.
You know, tire dust.
Yeah, you do get,
and
yeah.
So the first time she went, she wore a white shirt, and she went home gray.
It's even worse on the infield.
I'm sure.
You get dirty for different reasons.
Yes.
May, which means for all the kids who aren't listening to this podcast, you're almost done with school.
Home stretch.
We're getting down to it. Now, I do want to address one thing before we get going here. I got called out during today's service, and I feel the need to correct you on something.
Okay.
During this past Sunday's service, it was implied that I was on my phone playing Pokemon Go.
That's what it looked like.
There is no way...
Oh.
I would ever be playing Pokemon Go.
I disgraced you.
Whether
by
in
you in
church
that
or not. I will point out that I was simultaneously responding to an online viewer and texting with my child's friend's mother to coordinate for her this afternoon. But so it wasn't fully paying attention to the sermon at that point in time.
Well, I saw your headshot shoot up. He really was focusing on his phone.
I was trying to write something out to somebody, and
he heard his name called. I did by get the called, teacher.
And then my name further besmirched by saying that I was playing Pokemon. Not the case, and I await your retraction. Public, and I don't count this podcast.
Oh. Well, to be completely honest about, the biggest reason I chose Pokemon was to honor the Spanglers.
Yes, yeah,
who
yeah.
Could
yeah.
not come to church today. I knew they'd be watching. I knew that would give them a little smile.
Next week, just to be spiteful, I will be playing Pokemon Go during your sermon, during your homily.
With the sound up.
With the sound up. Huh? What? I'm trying to catch a... A Pikachu. I don't know. Anyways.
I want gems.
So, anyways, with that correction,
yes.
I do want to point out a couple of things going on at the church.
Oh, that's a good idea.
This Friday is game night.
It'll meet in the youth room.
It'll meet in the youth room. Somebody is utilizing the parish hall.
Yes.
Whatever. But we'll be in the youth group room. Come play games. I'll buy us pizza.
Bring games.
It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. 7 o'clock. Seven o'clock is the time. I think we're all done with music and meditation.
Yes.
Because that otherwise would have been this coming Sunday. But
though Joel has agreed to do it as an offertory.
Yes.
During the summer months.
Yes, which I'm really excited for. I don't know if it's going to be like a series of them, a singular Sunday, but I'll take whatever I get.
Me too.
Because I'm really excited about that. The parish picnic, the Pentecost picnic, is the 19th.
Yep.
And that is after the conclusion of the 11 o'clock service.
10 o'clock, but yes.
10 o'clock service, which concludes at 11, which is what my brain was trying to think of.
It's in the neighborhood.
Yeah. You know what? If you come to the 11 o'clock service, quote unquote,
the hot dogs will be hot.
You'll be well fed spiritually and physically. Culinarily. That's coming up. So that's 3-ish weeks, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. Yeah. A little less than. And anything else?
In between, the flower sale.
The flower sale.
And craft sale.
When is that?
That is, I want to say May 8th.
May 8th. We will look for confirmation. Hold, please. So how are you doing?
I'm currently having flashbacks. I've been trying to get access to my health savings account for like 3 months.
Oh.
And it's that kind of experience with the ending of it being you don't have sufficient information to access this account.
The plant sale is taking place on Saturday, May 11th, from 9 to 3. 9 to 3. May
great plants, 11th. Great prices.
Yes.
I presume the craft things will be awesome. And if you'd like to be a craft seller, you can contact the church office to get information on that.
Yes. One more thing to mention about the Pentecost picnic, the Pentecost Sunday, we're having the 10 o'clock service outdoors.
Yes, at the chapel.
So that will be exciting. That will be fun to run all those wires out there. and I'm looking forward to it. So a lot of fun things going on. And that's, of course, weather permitting.
Yeah.
If the weather does not permit, we will be indoors. You'll just have to hold your tiny flames.
keep them safe.
Keep them safe inside.
Otherwise, you'll find yourself on a Reels thing on Facebook or whatever.
Spiritual larceny. Spiritual larcenists. Anyways, so I think that's pretty much everything that we have for events. Sorry. One more thing about Pentecost. We will be doing the celebration for the graduates. On
high school graduates.
So, although, do we have any college grads this year?
I don't know. Whenever I've asked about it, what people have said, they should be getting jobs by now. No, they don't.
Shows the age of our congregation. We are trending into the kids these days.
Those were the parents. Yeah,
I don't know, but I'm not paying for it anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the graduation Sunday is the 19th as well. Let's move on to this day in church history.
Hooray.
Shall we? Our first entry here comes from 1572, and we start right off with the election of Jeremias II as Patriarch of Constantinople. The Turks will remove him from office twice, imprison him once. More than most patriarchs, he will interact with the West. He will also make the Russian Orthodox Church self-governing.
That was a big deal.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of territory that was allowed to leave.
Yes.
To be their own thing.
1624, we get right into the killing right thereafter. Antonio Omum, I believe that H is silent. I tried to research it ahead of time. A Christian theologian from Coimbra University is burned at the stake.
Where's the university?
I was about to say. Oh. In an auto de fe in Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh.
He was Jewish by ancestry. His family had been forced to convert to Christianity in the 16th century, and the Portuguese Inquisition accused him of Jewish sympathies and secret Jewish worship, in part because he had recited some of the more Jewish, and I'm doing quotes, Jewish-sounding psalms from the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible.
Which means it was all in Latin.
Yes.
Not Jewish-sounding at all.
Yes. Just so you know, in case you're looking for another website to maybe surf around, this the authority for this date comes from the website called executedtoday.com.
Oh, my goodness. That's got to put you on a watch list.
I think so. But my goodness. Anyways, 1766, death of Jean Struck, a pioneer in the study of venereal diseases and of biblical criticism. I am not entirely sure the structure of this sentence, if both of those are studies, or if he's known for the study of venereal diseases and he has biblical criticism. I'm not sure. In an effort, I did find this part also interesting. In an effort to defend the books of Moses, he noted the different contexts of Elohim and Yahweh, which are both Hebrew names for God, and proposed the documentary hypothesis that Genesis was based on several ancient sources.
What? And what year?
1766 is when he died.
Okay. I was going to say he was ahead of his time, but not really.
Not really.
He started his time.
Yeah, more. Yeah, exactly.
It must have been frustrating to study VD because there's no treatments.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah, you got something different. Nothing to do with it.
Things are going to fall off soon.
1806, although some sources say 1808. Death in Virginia of James Ireland, a Baptist preacher who had undergone severe incarceration and several attempts upon his life at the hands of the established church in Virginia.
Probably that was the Episcopal Church, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's
post-revolution, right?
Post-revolution. Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
So it's a little wonky to call it the established church, because by the U.S. Constitution that wasn't possible.
Right.
But it's most of the colonists in Virginia were members of the Episcopal Church when Revolution ended.
So there we go.
You take the blame or credit.
Knock on us, I suppose. 1886, a general conference of, and I'm reading the actual term here, so don't at me. A general conference of the Colored Methodist Episcopal Church, yeah, later renamed the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, meets in Augusta, Georgia. Its principal achievement will be to the establishment of a financial system that assesses 20 cents per year on each member, to be divided in this way: for bishops, 8 cents, missions, 3 cents, education, 3 cents, publishing interests, 3 cents, Israel Church, and Miles Chapel, 3 cents. The system will work well and be retained with various variations for many years.
Interesting.
So
you really knew where your tax dollars were going.
Exactly, exactly. And boy, bishops sure got a lot. 8 cents for bishops. All right. I mean,
they earned every penny, probably. I mean, KKK burning crosses on their lawns and that sort of thing.
I mean, maybe. 40% of that income, though. I mean, that's a big chunk. That's a big chunk for that. 1910, death in Edinburgh, Scotland, of Alexander McLaren, a nonconformist preacher who had preached from the original languages of the Bible and witnessed deep transformations in the church he pastored. He had thought his sermons fell short, but posterity will regard them as among the clearest ever published.
Oh, cool.
1922, William Carson begins tent meetings in Los Angeles that leads to the formation of the
Apostolic.
I always want to do apostle.
Yeah.
Apostolic. Yeah. Apostolic. Apostolic Faith Home Assembly in August of 1923. So the tent revival.
Pentecostal. Part of the Pentecostal movement, the actual creation of it. You know, people think that's a very primitive, as an early expression of Christianity, but it's actually one of the newest.
Yeah, yeah. 1941, arrest of the Orthodox Bishop Platon of Banja Luka in Croatia by the fascist group known as the Ustasi. He had been ordered to...
They were like the SS.
Yes. He had been ordered to leave, but appealed for time to set his church affairs in order. He will be killed along with hundreds of thousands of other individuals, mostly Serbs, in a campaign of ethnic cleansing. And that's in 1941.
Yeah, the German Nazis.
Yep.
Though a number of the countries had their own Nazi parties.
Yeah. And that's kind of why it's apt that you refer to the Ustashi as the SS, because it really was the, you know, yeah, that internal... Secret service, secret police.
Nasty people.
Yeah. 1998, our last entry here. Orthodox Russians of Yekaterinburg, Russia's fourth largest city and located in the Ural Federal District, burn a number of books by quote-unquote liberals, such as Alexander Menn, sometimes called the C.S. Lewis of the Soviet Union, Nicholas Afanasyev, Alexander Schmemann. Yep, that's right, Schmemann, and John Mayendorf, deeming them all heretical.
Jerks.
Yeah, so 1998, book burning.
Yeah, it's
still not out of practice, book burning, and getting closer to home these days.
Yes, and that the 1998 stuff was definitely when the Orthodox Church in Russia started to align itself with Putin and his holding on to power, developing his hold on power.
Yeah.
And part of that was getting way conservative and very controlling as to what people could even read.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very bad and still is.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of books that we're not going to burn, for sure.
No.
Let's move on to our first reading.
Yes, let's.
Which will I will remind the listeners, our first reading comes from the book of Acts during this season. So, Acts chapter 10, verse 44 through 48. While Peter was still speaking, the Holy Spirit fell upon all who heard the word. The circumcised believers who had come with Peter were astounded that the gift of the Holy Spirit had been poured out even on the Gentiles, for they heard them speaking in tongues and extolling God. Then Peter said, "Can anyone without the water for baptizing these? Can anyone withhold? Sorry, Can anyone withhold the water for baptizing these people who have received the Holy Spirit just as we have? So he ordered them to be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ. Then they invited him to stay for several days. It's a very short reading that seems like the basic point. The reason it's being chosen is to drive home the point that this is not a closely guarded experience. This is not this is the Word of God, and experiencing the Holy Spirit is not for reserved for a group of people, reserved just for the Jewish people, but it's this indication, which we've talked about several times during Jesus's ministry, of him talking about it going forth, going out, and being for all people. So this is Peter
actually, this is the first time.
Okay.
Peter says, yeah, it's for everyone.
You're leading into a little bit of my question, the context of where this is. What's going on in the story? It says while Peter was still speaking. I'm assuming Peter is speaking.
yes.
But who and when and why?
I guess it'll be faster not to try to do it in Greek.
ipso facto. Blah, blah, blah.
Switch to the English Bible I have.
Mm-hmm.
Peter is speaking to Caesareans.
Okay.
It's right after he had the vision from God of God's in charge of this movement, not mm-hmm. Peter, mm-hmm. Not the traditions Peter thinks he should uphold. And so a lot of his buddies would have been, wait a minute, what's he saying now? Because he hasn't had a chance to tell him about this vision. So this is the first they're hearing that Peter has suddenly done a 180 and is saying, yeah, baptize anyone. They don't have to become Jewish first. They don't have to have grown up Jewish. So who are we to say who can and cannot be baptized?
Yeah. Yeah. The
which we as Christians very quickly answer given the chance.
I have thoughts. I think with as short with as little context as is in this reading, one might be forgiven for thinking that this is part of the story when the tongues of fire come down, because it has some similar qualities. Talking about for they heard them speaking in tongues and extolling God, and like, wait a minute, that happened in that other story. This isn't that one. This is later. So maybe perhaps a little bit of a surprise because it, you know, spoiler alert, here in 2 weeks we'll. You know, read that one, I believe. And it has kind of a similar vibe. So,
yeah.
It is interesting because Peter would have been part of that experience, right? In Jerusalem.
Yeah. The first Pentecost.
So if this is a 180 for him, that kind of implies like, oh yeah. So earlier, a very similar thing happened, and he was like, for people who were not Jewish, because that's like part of the reading.
Yep.
Kind of implies like Peter was off to the side going like, yeah, this isn't right. You know what I mean? Like
God ain't more accurately.
Right? This is all, or at the very least, this is all well and good, but you know,
yeah.
You got to become Jewish first. Like, look at all these people who are now going to become Jewish and then can be baptized. Yeah. So this isn't, I guess for Peter as a character in readings that we are experiencing, that is potentially also a formative experience that he's had time to think about and to ruminate on.
And God yell at him.
And God yell at him a little bit. You know, it just kind of, I like that part, that aspect of the story, because it drives home a little bit of the point of like, hey, when you think about things, you know, specifically, and to try to discern what, how you fit in and what your action should be and what your reaction should be. It's nice to see that, like, you know, hey, it's okay that you don't always get it right the first time.
Yeah.
And it's okay to change your mind.
Yeah.
Of having this realization of, like, you know, the more I've, you know, the more I think about it, and, you know, once I got yelled at, you know, voice of God had some good ideas, made some good points.
That's right.
But, you know, it opens that line for correction. Like, I think all too often, especially in modern day, we're encouraged to formulate a thought about a thing.
Anything.
And then, like, that's set in stone.
Defend it to the death.
Defend it to your death, at least.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you change your mind, then
you're weak.
Yeah. Or you're not honest. That you're wishy-washy.
I was trying to think of that term. Yeah.
And that you you'll change your tune for, you know, whoever you're in front of.
You blow with the wind.
Right. I always like stories like these because they do kind of show, like, are you going to sit there and say, you know, Peter, you know, what an untrustworthy person and you know, worthless. Like, we should just carve him out of the Bible because he changed his mind. What a loser.
He's so disloyal.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, just one of those things that I kind of like pointing out.
Well, yeah. In the book of Acts, Peter gets to continue his role from the Gospels of being the screw up who's forgiven every time.
Yeah. Yeah. And really does, it does detail, not like, you kind of always imagine these stories being like, there's this definitive moment and then it's all, you know, it's all trajectory upward from there.
Yeah.
Peter's the great example of, like, I mean, generally trending up, but it's not without its hiccups.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, I'm on the straight and narrow now. I'm going to get it right every time. I'm never going to make another bad choice. Somewhere in his life, he is still, denying Peter, that still stumbles. And
in the Gospels, it's described as Peter pulling Jesus aside to correct him about getting crucified.
Yeah.
Come on, Jesus, that's really dumb. And Book of Acts continues that.
Yeah.
Of basically pulling God aside and saying, yeah, I realize you love everyone,
right,
but really they have to get circumcised.
Right, yeah. But really, Judaism, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you meant. You didn't say it, but I knew what you meant.
Right.
No. Okay. All right. We're processing.
Right.
We're processing. and what I like about that is Peter is, one of our Christian models.
Yeah.
That's on this pedestal. And however, like, you can read this and go, like, this is like, you are you seriously having trouble imagining yourself doing, as you know, the work that Peter does? Look at how doesn't this resonate with you in any way?
Isn't this reassuring?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think you're too much of a screw up to, you know, be that important? Show me in here. Show me in these writings where he was, you know, just,
yeah,
it, you know, beyond reproach.
At times it seems like especially the Gospels, kind of almost pile on to Peter of what I was going to say is what a screw-up he is, but really how human he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's part of what Christianity all too often in history has ignored when we put human leaders on pedestals and say, yes, they're infallible. Yes, they get to do what they want because they know God better than we do.
Yeah.
And, okay, here's Peter, who arguably knew Jesus as well as anyone. And Peter was wrong. So people did have to take with a grain of salt what Peter thought was a good idea.
Yeah. And I'll take the analogy just a little bit further. If you, if you don't quite relate to the Peter character in that, like, boy, he really seems like, public speaking is his thing and out there, and that's just really not me, then allow me to invite you to put yourself in the shoes of any of the other apostles who, as a result of the way that these stories are told, seem to be like the kind of characters who'll be like, let's just hang back. Peter will go out there, do his Peter thing, and totally, like, let him take the heat.
Right. Let him make
maybe
the mistakes.
You're like one of the other apostles who are like, no, just wait for it. There it is.
Okay,
there it
now
is.
Now we know what to do.
There it
now
is.
Now we know how to believe.
And yeah. Just let Peter either get it right or flub it and get it wrong, and we will learn by example.
Just wait, and he'll say the quiet parts loudly.
Right, exactly. Because it really does take all kinds. And, and you know, just to bring it home, that's I'm a little bit more of the Peter character. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm happy to jump out in front and, you know, get corrected in some way, shape, or form so that those around you go, well, thank God somebody jumped in front of that train. Taught us all a lesson. Good job, Ben.
Well, what I always try to tell vestries when I become rector or vicar of a church is, remember, I think out loud, so by the time I finish introducing a topic, I may have changed my mind.
Yeah.
So hang in there. We'll see where we end up.
A lot of people say it's not a good way to lead, and I say you're wrong. That stories like this, like to bring it back and to summarize it, I think are great humanizing stories.
Yes.
for me. Is there anything else beyond the humanity that we equate to in this reading that you want to point out?
Well, I love verse 47. Then Peter said, "Can anyone withhold the water for baptizing these people who have received the Holy Spirit just as we have?" It's almost like Jesus in the Gospels saying, whoever's without sin,
cast the first stone.
Yeah. Yeah. He really is calling out the people who were starting to grumble.
Yeah.
It's okay. Who's objecting?
Yeah.
No one? No one? Okay, let's go baptize.
Luckily, they didn't have a Peter-like person in their car who would jump up in front and go, I'll do it! Sure, me, why not? I'll try. Let's move on. Let's move on to the psalm. It is a 9-verse psalm. We get to read the whole thing, which is great. I always kind of like it when we do that. It's always a little harder when we have like a 127-verse psalm and we read 6 verses and they go, here's what this psalm's about. So this will be nice. Psalm 98 is our psalm for this week. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have gotten him victory. The Lord has made known his victory. He has revealed his vindication in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his steadfast love and faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the victory of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre and the sound of melody, with trumpets and the sound of the horn. Make a joyful noise before the King, the Lord. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and those who live in it. Let the floods clap their hands. Let the hills sing together for joy at the presence of the Lord, for he is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with equity. I'm going to take a stab at what I think the background of Psalm 98 might be. My guess is you're going to say something like you usually say, which is, we know a little bit about this psalm, but we don't know that much.
Old.
But this seems like it is more of a congregational hymn. Kind of a thing.
It does, yeah.
Great, I'm right. So,
quit while you're ahead.
But do we know anything else about the psalm? It's old, looks like it's a hymn. Anything else?
Just checking one more source.
Do we know the author of any of these psalms? No. I'm still waiting for one where it's like, oh yeah, this one is so-and-so.
Fred's.
Yeah, good job, Fred.
No, yeah, we do not know the author of any psalm.
Well, then I'll stop asking.
To which God says, finally. Okay, here's what the commentary says.
Okay.
The purpose of this psalm as a whole is so obvious that it may be left without extended comment.
Boy, that's... That really does invite the reader to think that they're stupid.
Yeah.
This one's so obvious that I'm not even going to say anything about it. Oh, okay.
Just about, yeah.
I still had questions, though. Does that make me dumb?
Well, then it throws in the fun fact that there are, in the Bible, 258 references to the hand of God.
Oh, okay.
So it's a common motif. What I'm interested in, but I'm not seeing, maybe it's one of those things I'm supposed to already know as to how old it is. Because often they can figure that out by vocabulary and grammar.
Gotcha. Well, let me see here real quick. I love the imagery that is in verse 8. The hills sing together for joy is one that I feel like is somewhat, I don't want to say common, but like,
oh yeah,
when it says that, like I can imagine, I can see it like in my head of like, oh yeah, you know, kind of like when the sun peaks over the hills, like yeah, almost like in that moment, that's the encapsulated vibe that comes to mind. But the part of the verse before that is one that I don't think I've ever heard or don't remember hearing. Let the floods clap their hands.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Definitely invites some weird imagery in my brain. Keep the beat, floods. But yeah, but the fact that it uses the word floods, like I wonder if it's like, generally that's not, the hills are, a pleasant thing. The floods are destructive.
Not necessarily.
Oh, that's true. Floods would be like,
could be life-giving.
Could be life-giving, bringing, the
good soil.
The good soil to everything. Okay, okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I got it now.
You don't have to control everything.
It's so obvious. Ben, jeez. So obvious.
Well, and there you forgot your Hebrew poetry construct.
Repetition.
Where verse 7 is, let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and those who live in it. Let the floods clap their hands. So it's part of that, okay, you already got an ocean on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then, okay, let's get more personal and up close. Floods. Yeah, floods are great. They're powerful, somewhat unpredictable, but more importantly, they help crops grow.
Yeah.
So they're wonderful that way. And now the floods are praising God. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. I do want to clarify, we have yet another example of a use of a word that I believe is incorrectly interpreted.
Okay.
And that because it's been incorrectly used before. The word judge in verse 9. If memory serves correctly, I believe the last time I had questioned this word, it turned out it was more like rule.
Yeah.
And reign over.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
Hey, see, you could teach this old dog.
It sank in.
So, which of course, especially for modern Christianity, drastically changes the meaning of the end of this.
Yeah.
The presence of the Lord, for he is coming to rule the earth, to reign, to, and he will reign over the whole world with righteousness and the peoples with equity.
Yeah.
Which really does align with the world, with that interpretation, as opposed, that would really be a juxtaposition of the word judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that implies sentencing.
Yeah. Yeah. You could win or you could lose.
Right. So anyways, just pointing that out. Anything?
Very good.
Anything else?
Yes. I finally found age reference.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the same era as 2 Isaiah.
Mm.
So.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So.
So this would have been one that would have lasted from pre-temple build, rebuild, to actually being used in the temple thereafter.
Yeah.
It would have seen that kind of a lifespan of here's a hymn from our return from exile, and now we get to use it in the temple.
Yeah,
and the worship space that we built.
And particularly verses 4 through 6,
mm-hmm.
which grammatically are considered to be a definite stanza.
Mm. Okay.
So they may have even been written later after the temple was restored. But in any case, refer to what's it like to worship in the temple.
Yeah.
You know, there are musical instruments. There's singing. It takes a acoustically cooperative space mm-hmm. to have that kind of worship, both in terms of size and being enclosed. So that's not how you would worship on the road back to Israel when you're freed from captivity.
Right, right, right. anything else?
I recommend reading the psalm with the idea that the people basically are walking into Jerusalem for the first time, and then after they're there a while, they add verses 4 through 6.
Yeah, no, I like that, and especially given that imagery of coming back to Israel, that first line, mm-hmm. "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song."
Yeah,
for he has done marvelous things, mm-hmm. Which is let's get rid of those old dusty hymns.
See where they got us.
Something new has happened.
Yeah.
It's a new day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on to our gospel reading.
Indeedy.
Gospel of John, chapter 15, verse 9 through 17. Ooh, we get some more abides. All right.
Yes, we do.
"As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I choose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask him in my name. I am giving you these commands so that you may love one another." So this is still in, this is shortly before
arrest
and handing over for crucifixion. Is this in the upper room? Is this part of
that? Still going on with the Last Supper.
Okay.
Which John doesn't actually spell out, but
yeah. Right. And then just
had foot washing.
Last week we ended on verse 8, and this week we start with verse 9. So this is a strict continuation from last gospel reading. I'm curious as to whether or not the correct word is used here for the word friends.
Yeah, what verse is that?
It starts in verse 13.
Okay.
No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Just because...
It looks like it's friend.
Is it? Okay. I was just wondering because of the way the societal aspect worked during that period of time. I was wondering if there's it's so much friends or if it's more like communal, since the community would have been very close-knit. It's not so much like, oh, these are my friends within the community.
Okay, I think I see what you're getting at. It's not... It's not the kind of friends that you just watch the game with.
Right.
These are the kind of friends that would visit you in the hospital when you're visiting a beloved family member.
Yeah. And your entire existence is intertwined.
Yeah.
Because of that.
As close as a brother.
Yeah. Right. So, which does lose some meaning.
Yeah.
In modern day translations.
Well, and it's another word like, you know, listen to the sermon from last week. It's another word that really doesn't have an English equivalent,
mm-hmm.
where we have to say things like, oh, yeah, he was like a brother to me. If we're describing a person who we were extremely close to who died and yet was not a relative,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or a sexual partner. So it's a word that doesn't have a direct English equivalent.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't want readers to hear that line, like to lay down one's life for one's friends and have that realization of like, I don't think I'd do that. I don't know. Cause we don't live in that kind of society anymore.
Right.
But when you do say, when you add that familial relationship, reference, you can start to kind of see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you know,
It's a little easier.
It is a little easier. What's interesting about that is, for me, that shows how much we've changed as a society. Like, this line, I don't think anybody... This line is not one of Jesus's lines where, you know, those who hear it cock their head and go, huh? You know what I mean? Not like one of his...
Well, you never know in John.
That's true. You never know in John.
Jesus never takes a breath for someone to make a reaction.
But it's not like one of those lines from
like the crowd was troubled for they knew not what he meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or I don't know why I'm highly caffeinated and I still can't think of the terminology when he tells stories that are always twists.
Parables.
Parables. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. It's not like those lines in a parable where you go, oh,
yeah.
Wait a minute. That's not how that should go.
Mm-hmm. It's much more
literal. This is a really, literal. Like, you understand this concept.
Yeah.
Like, he would have said this and everybody at the table would have been like, yeah, 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 yeah. Okay,
yeah, I gotcha. And now I giggled because I'm thinking if there was video of this speech, at this point, Jesus would turn to the camera, break the fourth wall, and say, except for you who are going to be reading this in English. Won't make sense.
Loving one enough to lay down one's life. How do I put this?
Yeah.
You have no context for this.
You selfish jerks.
Imagine not being fully absorbed with your oneself.
Jesus, how about my dog? I like my dog better than people.
Would you die for your dog? No. No, but I would pay money to keep my dog alive.
I work overtime for my dog.
Oddly enough, let me put it in monetary terms. Laying down one's life for money. Got it. I got it. Essentially, that's what we do.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it it really does. And this story is kind of very interesting because of the line that occurs later. I don't call you servants any longer.
Yeah.
Which, especially in the book of John, it really does have that servile role between
him and the disciples. Well, you just washed their feet.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is for the disciples. This is
quite a promotion. A
big change.
Yeah.
So if anything, if they were stunned by anything and confused, it would have been by, you know, but why? Why? How is this relationship turning on its head? That doesn't make any sense. We're not equal to you. We're not. Why are you washing our feet? Why are we no longer your servants? That doesn't make any sense. Rabbi, father. What?
And then he's killed. I was like, oh no. Is that what we have to do? Was that why I was talking about that?
Is it that just the gimmick so that he could go before Pilate and be like, look, I do what they tell me.
Yeah.
I'm not in charge. Why, just the other night I washed their feet.
I've never thought of it that way.
Who am I? No. Yeah, actually, now that I say that out loud, I wonder if that was any of the disciples' thoughts of like, oh, we've been set up.
Yeah. Run away!
He just got arrested. Remember when he said, no, no, no. I'm not in charge. You are. We're all equal co-conspirators in this. Oh, no.
Well, maybe that's why they're in the locked room out of fear.
It could be. Yeah. I've never thought of it.
Me neither.
But yeah, it all jokes aside on that, John's Jesus does a very good job of kind of like knitting the rest of this speech kind of together, and kind of bringing it back full circle. He talked about bearing fruit. He talked about abiding in love, and he does this, and he just did do the servile thing of washing feet. So if you reread that as like maybe the bookend of this experience, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, thereafter, isn't that kind of the end of the story in the upper room? And then aside from like one of you is going to betray me, is I think that takes place afterwards. Or does that take place before? I totally forget.
There's a long time. Jesus continues to talk for two more chapters.
Oh my, okay.
And then he's arrested.
Interesting, because this does feel like it sums it up pretty nicely.
Yeah. But he goes into the, and I haven't looked to see if we have these in gospel readings coming up on Sundays, but goes into more what their lives are going to be like after crucifixion, resurrection, when Jesus is no longer physically with them.
Well, if I may be permitted to make one more funny, then I wonder if the disciples had the same reaction I just did, where they're like, good speech. Oh, he's still talking. Okay.
Well, especially because what comes next is how they will be killed by people thinking they're doing God's will.
Okay. Yeah.
It occurs to me. I don't know if we've ever had this for in the Sunday lectionary.
I know it's not next week.
Yeah,
we skip forward two chapters.
Yeah. We skip this tough stuff.
The tough stuff.
Yeah.
How dare us? But yeah, as a homily giver, I'm sure you've received critique from time to time. I wonder how close to home that thought is of like somebody coming up and being like, boy, you really, you know, really tied it up in a bow, and then you kept talking.
Oh, I thought I told you this. One of the disadvantages of having a blended family with two priests as the parents, blending them, is we multiplied how many sermon critiquers are in our lives.
So everybody's a critic.
Everyone's a critic. So many times driving the minivan home, there was, you had more than one ending there.
What is this? The end of the Lord of the Rings? Pick one and cut it off.
Yes. I think that example was used.
That's funny. That's funny.
It did make me a better preacher, though.
There you go. Worried about what the children and yeah. your wife will say. Yeah, that would make you paranoid.
Or careful.
But yeah, for myself to tie it up in a bow, especially since we had our dude abides reading last week, and we continue to have a little bit of abide here. One of the most well known parts of the gospel readings is the greatest commandment, right? Mm-hmm. The greatest of these is love, and you see Jesus coming back to that. In this, the mm-hmm. first ending of his speech, and that's really the point. He's going with this word that means continuous, that has like a continuity vibe to it, which is the word abide, saying that that it really does drive home the idea that it all comes back to this concept of love. And doing it now, doing it before, doing it later, constantly being a part of your process in life. And extending that not only from, this idea that he's been reiterating several times over, which is because the Father loves me and I love you, therefore we're all in this great circle of love together. He does kind of put a finishing touch on it, talking about how, that's why I consider you friends. That's why I consider you mm-hmm. essential to my life.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, forget about the Father, just us, that's so important. That's why
he does go on.
Yeah.
To talk about. Yeah, the Father's so poor. Don't forget totally
he
about
like
the Father.
He truncates it and then untruncates it and expands it.
Which is a good teaching technique.
Yeah, exactly. So, and builds it back up and saying like, and that's why when I say you should bear fruit to the Father, because of the Father, that it goes out. Like this is, he makes it close-knit and then says, why can't that be the way that you treat everybody? There's no reason why that concept cannot be duplicated and shared with everybody. You
meet. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of seems to be the point. Anything else that you want to point? One. You're allowed one.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Verse 8.
Yes. Verse 8, which we don't read.
We don't?
No, we read that last week.
Crud.
Do you want to point out one thing about last week?
Well, no, it ties it reinforces with the sermon.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That my Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples.
Mm.
Becomes should be. You are.
You already are. You have been this whole time.
Yeah.
It's another You've one been of those a disciple this whole time.
Tap your shoes 3 times. Okay.
There's no place
I'm glad
like
you
discipleship.
Pointed out that I don't
There's
get to
no
talk
place
about
like
again.
Discipleship. There's no place like discipleship.
It's so close.
And with that, maybe we do call you home. Because there is no place like home, and there is no place like abiding in love with one another.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever. Amen. So we encourage you to join us in worship this week. Find out what Bruce is going to say. Feel free to critique it.
Yeah.
Make sure he has only one ending to his sermon. whatever engages you in the process.
If you want the advanced course.
Ooh, yeah.
You have to do that. Yeah. Experience the 8 o'clock sermon.
Okay.
Which is not recorded.
Right.
and experience the 10 o'clock service, which you could do at any time since it is recorded, and see how they differ.
Yeah.
And
see how he changes his tune between in a 2 hour time frame.
What's the theological flip flop here?
What is this fire and brimstone 8 o'clock? And then this lovey dovey hippie session in the middle. What? No, it is worth, I will say I did get a chance to experience that. I've done that before. That is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Usually you get better with saying it the second time around.
Depends who you ask.
Well, I'm not going to ask your children or your wife. I don't need to be sucked into that. But yeah, we enjoy you to join us in worship. 8 o'clock, as Bruce has pointed out, in person. 10 o'clock, also in person, but also available online.
And you can watch the replay if you go in person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just had images of redoing your sermon as a John Madden style
telestrator.
Telestrator. He does here is he makes a mistake, don't he? Love John Madden.
Look at his eyes rubbing the back of his head. I thought he was going to go down there. He kept his feet.
Verbally trips over a little bit. All right. Until next week. This is the end of your podcast, May 5th, the sixth Sunday of Easter in year B. And until next week. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And we will be better oriented next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.